It was read this morning, Jesus makes some very bold statements, and time will not permit me to deal with all the ramifications of what Jesus said. Some of these I still struggle with after all these years. But he makes statements like, "You are the salt of the earth," in verse 13. "You are the light of the world," verse 14. "If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off," Matthew 5:30. In verse 39, he says, "Turn the other cheek." In verse 44, he says, "Love your enemies." In Matthew 7, verse 12, Jesus says, "Treat people the way you want to be treated." Regardless of how they treat you, you treat people the way you want to be treated. Every time Jesus makes these bold statements, he means it. He expects us to live by these things. He doesn't expect us to say, "Well, it's an option," or, "Well, this circumstance says this," or this. No, no. He makes these statements. He expects us to live by these ideas, these ideals, these attitudes. He expects us to follow them. He expects us to live by them. Now, every normal person wants to succeed. There may be a few out there that need some help that would say, "Well, you know, I don't want to succeed. Better get some help." Everybody wants to succeed. Nobody wants to be a failure. If a man is going to be an attorney, he wants to be a good lawyer. If a person is a teacher, they want to teach in such a way as to change lives. If a person is a businessman, do they just want to be an ordinary businessman? Why, no, you want to be extraordinary. Sunday school teachers, you should want to be the most effective Sunday school teacher possible. And if you are a leader in the Lord's church, you should want to be the best leader you can possibly be. I believe that the secret to success in leadership and in life is found in this text this morning and in this particular verse in Matthew 5, verse 41. "And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too." Let's look at some background. Whoever compels you to go a mile. Within the context, the word translated compel is dealing with a compulsion by public authorities for public service. It's sort of like being pressed into service in the military in ancient days. Ken, turn that down just a little bit. I'm getting a little bit too much. Thank you. So when you're called upon by a rightful authority to travel and do some public service, Jesus is saying you need to be ready to go farther and you need to be ready to do even more than what is required rather than trying to resist and resent those who would compel you. After the return from Babylonian captivity, King Cyrus, the king of Persia, he developed a courier system for carrying the king's messages to the most remote parts of the kingdom. And this courier system was such that he had individuals waiting at different spots along any route. And they would have a mode of travel. It may be a horse, it may be a boat, it may be whatever they needed to be able to cover their area. They were to wait in that spot, and when a message came along, they were to then take that message and travel the distance to get that out to where it needed to go. And the person that was delivering the message, we will call him a herald, he was authorized to compel any person to take any horse or boat or ship or other vehicle that he might need for the quick delivery of the king's correspondence. His commandment, his message, whatever it was, and it was to this custom that our Savior is referring. This thing that was set in place by King Cyrus so long ago. You can imagine, of course, how well the Jews took to this. Now they're under Roman rule, and the Romans continued this policy, but they did make one limitation on it. To try to prevent abuse, the Roman rule was you can be compelled to travel 1 Roman mile. 1 Roman mile. Now our miles are 5,280 feet. But the Roman mile then was 1,000 steps. That was a Roman mile, 1,000 steps. So it would be something a little less than half a mile, okay? Would be about the distance that you could be compelled to help to assist a Roman soldier or a Roman citizen. They could compel you to carry their pack. So a Roman soldier, he had this pack that he traveled with. It contained some personal garments, a few personal possessions, and the tools of his trade. And so in this pack, some of them were pretty heavy. And so you can imagine, here's a Jewish farmer, and he's working in his field and all this, and this Roman soldier comes by and says, "Jew boy, come here." You had to go. You don't go, and he'll send back some soldiers to take you, and they'll arrest you. And you'll either be charged a fine, or you might get a beating if you're lucky. "Jew boy, come here." You go over there. "Here, carry my pack," because he's hot, he's tired. "Carry my pack." So the Jew boy, you know, he's grumbling and he's fussing and he's angry and he's all this, and he puts that pack on and he starts trudging down the road, and he gets there and he gets to the end of the road. It was said that all these Jewish men had a mile marker, a Roman mile marker, planted in every direction from their home. On every road from their home, they had one planted. They stepped it off, and they planted that marker so they would know exactly how far they were compelled to carry it. Rome didn't issue those. They did it themselves. And that way, he gets to that mile marker, and he takes that pack off, and the soldier reaches for it, and he just throws it on the ground and marches on back home, grumbling and fussing as he's going, because he had to carry that man's pack. Boy, don't you know that made a good impact on that soldier? Don't you know that made that soldier want to be a good Jew? And so Jesus says to these Christian people, to these people that would serve him. Now, they're not Christian yet, but he's wanting us to be like Christ, even back then. So he's saying to these Jewish people, and ultimately to us, if you're compelled to go a mile, go two. So here's the scenario. The Jewish boy, "Come here, Jew boy, carry my pack." "Yes, sir." And he picks the pack up, and, "How are you doing today?" Well, he's not used to having to talk to the Jews. "Well, I'm fine." And so they start walking along, and he says, "You know, I just got to tell you, I met someone the other day, and he just changed my life, and I just got to tell you about him." And he's telling him about Jesus. And before you know it, they get to that mile marker, and he just keeps on going. The Roman says, "Oh, wait a minute, you don't have to. Oh, that's all right, come on, I'm not finished. Let me tell you some more." And he keeps on walking with him and talking to him. And can you imagine the impact that had on that Roman soldier? What kind of impact would that have on a Roman citizen that would compel this Jewish person to carry his baggage? What kind of impact would that have? And that's the message that Jesus is trying to get across. Carry it 2 miles. Don't just carry it one. So, Jesus declares, he says, the attitude of a Christian, the attitude of one that would serve me, is I'll carry it a second mile. I want to look at 2 applications to this verse this morning. There's a primary and a secondary. So let's look first at the primary, and that's the idea of going the second mile of forbearance and forgiveness, because that's what Jesus is talking about. When he says, if someone compels you to go with him 1 mile, go two. He's talking about bearing with someone. They're making you do something that you don't have to do, but yet you're forced to do it. And yet he's saying, do it willingly. And don't just do what's required, go above and beyond. The Medal of Honor is the highest award that our military can give. And it is reserved for those military individuals that have gone above and beyond what is required, above and beyond the call of duty, and many of those have been presented posthumously after the person died doing that for which they're being awarded this significant, outstanding medal. Above and beyond. That's what Jesus is calling for. He's calling for all of us to be Medal of Honor winners. He's calling for all of us to go above and beyond the call of duty. Above and beyond that which is required. But wait a minute, this is kind of strange because, you know, he tells us that when people mistreat us and are overbearing to us, we're supposed to turn the other cheek, we're supposed to go the second mile, but it's a dog-eat-dog world. How can we do that? People say, you know, when you hear what he said about me, or he started it, sound like some children, you know, in an argument. Don't talk about the person even if they're in the wrong. That's the point. Somebody says, wait a minute, I've already forgiven him 25 times. Well, then you've only got 465 more to go today. And it starts over tomorrow. By the way, that is symbolic, not literal number. Jesus is saying, if a brother sins against you 490 times in one day, you forgive him. Well, I don't know that there have been occasions in my entire life where an individual could sin against me 100 times in a single day. I don't know that I've had that kind of interaction with anybody, much less 490 times. So it's a really interesting point Jesus is making. There's no limit to forgiveness. If someone says, look, I'm sorry, I was wrong, you have to forgive them. And so you treat people better than they deserve. You treat people the way you want to be treated. You know why people fuss and fight so much? And there's a lot of that going on. It's because people have not applied the second mile idea in the way we deal with others. You know, we live in a very high-strung, wound-up, tight, nervous, high-tension age, don't we? There's so much of that to deal with. We have so much. What happened with all these modern conveniences that were supposed to save us so much time? What happened with that? Were we sold a bill of goods? No, they actually are time-saving. We just crammed more into the same time that we've saved. That's the way we do it. It doesn't matter how much of a raise you get at work. You'll find a way to spend that money. Am I right? You will find a way. So the reality is, times are tough. There's so much tension out there. Road rage is at an all-time high. And while I'm not opposed to open carry, I'm afraid this rage is going to have some disastrous consequences as more and more ill-tempered people are packing. Okay? So if you are accustomed to yelling at other drivers for cutting you off, if you're accustomed to shaking your fist and shouting at people and they hear it, you might want to change your ways because you might get shot. It could happen. The world we live in is not like it used to be. I'm going to tell you something. I love these old John Wayne Westerns. You know one thing I really had noticed about that as a boy growing up? You don't step on John Wayne's foot. You step on John Wayne's foot, buddy, you better apologize. Or you're liable to be on the ground or pushing up the daisies, as he used to say. All right? Back then, if you bump a fella, you apologize. Why? Because he's got a gun. And you just might get shot for offending somebody. You know, people were a lot more polite back in those days because they knew there would be consequences for being a rude, crude dude. And so there's something about this. But road rage, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's not just on the road. It's at home. It's at work. And so people get up in the morning and they go to bed at night and they take a sleeping pill where they can sleep. And then they get up in the morning and they take a tranquility pill so they can wake up and get on with the day without being too uptight. And then they take an Excedrin during the work day just so they can keep going. And even with all the calmness, aids, all the things we can do, all the ums and transcendental meditation and all the things we try to do to function and make it through the day, we're standing ready to slap anybody to the ground who has the nerve to slap us on one cheek. We are ready to knock him down and put him in his place. How dare he? And we certainly won't turn the other cheek. And so there's no way I'm going the second mile. We might need to back up and rethink the attitudes that have become so prevalent in our society and even with many of us here today at Tanner. This impatient, nervous attitude causes husbands and wives to be caustic with each other, full of acid in the way they talk to each other. It causes friction in our churches. It causes tension in the workplace and even at school. Jones had a bad week at work, so he comes in and he bites Smith's head off the next day. You know, I mean, it's not the way it's supposed to be. Behavior like that, Christians are not supposed to act like that toward anybody, especially toward lost people. But we do, don't we? We do. And if we knew how people get going, what gets people started, if we knew what they were dealing with, if we knew what they were struggling with in their own personal lives, we might be less inclined to snap at them when they say something or do something that we don't like. We might be more inclined to be patient with someone and not jump on them if we knew the kind of load that they were carrying. When you feel mistreated, when someone's bothering you, you need to take a moment and ask yourself, does this person need my prayers? Does this person need my sympathy? Does this person need my understanding? Does this person need my patience? Or should I jump on him like he did me? How should I deal with people? Before you fuss at and get impatient with your waitress that messes up your order today, I want you to think about something. I want you to think about what she's going through, what she's had to deal with at home. See, what you don't know is her husband came home drunk last night and he had spent most of the money and now there wasn't enough to both pay the rent and buy groceries. So she's had to work a double shift today just to be able to buy food to feed her children. And yet she messed up your order. She gave you butter instead of margarine? Or the wrong salad dressing? Or as Faye and I saw last week, a lady, there's purple cabbage, purple leaves in my salad. I don't like purple leaves in my salad. You take those out. I'm serious. This lady did it and drove away in a mighty fine car. And I told that poor waiter, I said, son, I'm sorry to tell you this, but she is not going to tip you worth anything. He said, I know it. And he didn't do anything wrong, but she don't like purple cabbage in her salad. Or purple lettuce or whatever it is. I don't know my stuff. But it's pitiful how people will treat people and they don't have any clue what that individual's been having to deal with. What kind of trouble, what kind of stress, what kind of problems that are going on in their life. Do they need me to be patient with them? Do they need me? You know what I tend to do, and this is not bragging on me, but I learned this from an elderly brother who just touched my heart one day. He said, when a waiter or a waitress messes up my order, I look them in the eye and I tell them it'll be okay. And if they at least make any attempt to smile, or even if they have to just turn and walk away, obviously trying to fight back tears, you better bet you I'm going to give them a very big tip because they need it. They need it. And what kind of impact does that make on someone when you go the second mile? It just has a positive impact. So we need to follow the golden rule at all times and treat people the way we want to be treated. Now that's the primary application of this verse. Let me talk about the secondary application. And that is about being successful. The secret to success is tied up in these few words. You see, this verse will work on your job if you go second mile on your job. Now, I know people. In fact, I've talked to some folks that have worked in large companies that are well organized, and they have limits put on them by their fellow workers. You're making us look bad. You're making us look bad. Don't you do that. You're working too hard. You're too effective. You're making the rest of us look bad. And of course, we men say that about a guy that gives his wife flowers and candy and a pretty ring and all this, and we tell him, we pull him aside and say, look, you're making us look bad. We have some things like that. But in the workplace, if you're not trying to make your fellow workers look bad, but if you go above and beyond what is expected and required of you at work, you will succeed. And you will do better than what you otherwise would. You give this job double effort, go that second mile, and you will get to the top. Thomas Edison by the time he died, had left over 1,000 inventions to his credit. And many of them have affected and improved our quality of life today. But somebody once asked him, Mr. Edison, who by that time was considered to be a genius throughout the world, they said, please tell us, what is your definition of genius? And he responded, and these are his words, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. See, y'all heard that. That's the key to genius. It's success is tied up in the work that we put out. And so if you want to be a good if you want to have a good job, if you want to be good at your job, if you want to succeed in your job, put forth more than is required or expected of you, and you will succeed in that job. You show me a person that's just looking for the end of the day and payday, and I'll show you somebody that's never going to make it any higher than where they are. Not without hook or crook. But if you have that attitude of success with your job by doubling your efforts, it will work for your job. It will work for your home, work for your marriage. It'll work for your family relationships. You know, some couples, by their actions, are saying, I'm not going to do any more than I have to. I am not his slave. I am not her slave. And so they're just not going to do any more than is absolutely required of them. If you want to make your mate sit up and take notice, go the second mile. Go the second mile. It will work. Do more than what is expected of you. You treat her with a second mile attitude, and you're going to have a happy wife. You treat him better than he is expecting or requiring, and you're going to have a happy man. You go home and you do everything you can to be a blessing to everyone in your home, and you're going to have a happier home. Second mile service, it works on the job. It works in the home. But it also works in your Christian life, your Christian walk. Second mile service. Blessings come in their fullest measure to those who have put forth that second mile effort. That second mile principle has been put to work in their life. These people receive the fullest blessings from God. I'm positive that the secret to a great church is second mile service. I am positive of that. We're a good church. We are at Tanner. We are a good church. But we're not a great church. We can be a great church. But all of us need to work together and be committed to doing what the Lord said. Turn the other cheek. Go the second mile. Give. Do. Love. Be patient. Continue. Be faithful. We can be a great church. And we need to be a great church. 1 mile church members don't ever go far enough to do the will of God. Did you listen? Did you hear what I said? 1 mile church members never go far enough to obey and do the will of God. Do just enough to avoid hell and make it to heaven? You still have too much of the world in you if you're thinking like that. You got to get the world out. If I fill my life with the ungodly, then the godly gets crowded out. So we got to be careful and be aware of the distractions. We got to focus on obeying the Lord and being second mile servants. The only solution, go the second mile. Do more than others expect you to do. Now, here's the thing. Here's the hang on it. Here's the rub, as they say. You can never do more than God expects, can you? You can never do more than God expects. Be ye therefore perfect as I am perfect. That's what God says. So we've got a high standard to reach. We've got a high mark to strive for. And Paul says, I press on toward the mark. I've not arrived. I've not got there. And this is Paul talking. Paul. He says, I've not arrived. I press on. And so must we. But we need to do more than other people expect us to do. We're trying to influence for good. We're trying to help each other get to heaven. So I need to do more than you expect me to do. You need to do more than the other folks expect you to do. Do more than others expect you to do. And it will be a strong impact, a strong influence for good. If everyone would do this, God only knows what kind of work we could get done, what kind of growth we could have, what kind of influence for good we could have in our community by putting in that extra effort. If people would go the second mile, if every one of us would get that second mile spirit, we just can't allow ourselves to be content and sit on the pew and let somebody else do the work. All of us are to be leaders. All of us. Because we're charged with leading people to Jesus. We're charged with that. So all of us are to be leaders in a very real sense. Every Christian is a minister. Every Christian is a servant. Every Christian is a leader. Get out of your house and go see somebody. Get out of your house and go see somebody. Get up, get your car keys, get out of your house and go see somebody. Phone calls are great, but that's not enough. Cards are wonderful, but that's just not sufficient. We need eye-to-eye contact. We need to look at somebody eyeball to eyeball and let them know we care. And we show that care by being there. Go see somebody. There's people in the nursing home, people in the hospital, people that are shut in. There are recent visitors to our church service that would love to know that somebody at Tanner cares enough about them to come see them. Somebody that you're concerned about, get up and go see them. Somebody who needs some encouragement, you know who they are? Get up and go see them. And the list could go on and on. Invite people to church services. Invite them. Speak up. Build a better relationship with our newer members. We've got a lot of new people here. Do you know them all? Do you know their names? Do you know the names of their children? Build better relationships with our new members. Take somebody to lunch. Take them visiting with you. What do leaders do? They lead. What are we to do? Lead others to Christ. We're all to be leaders in serving the Lord, both in our example and influence, in our concern, our care, in our moral behavior, living upright before them, being a good influence and a good example, yes, but we get the world out and we put Jesus at the center. And then we reach out to people and we go further than they expect us to go. We do more than they expect us to do. We pray longer than anyone would think we would. We study. We grow. We go. We need to get serious about serving God. That's what leaders do. That's what second mile Christians do. And that's what we all need to do. So now I want you to ask yourself, am I a one-mile Christian or am I a second-mile Christian? What kind of church would we be if every church member were just like me? Something to think about. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.